Good morning. So this is the first talk of the Hokyoji June Sesshin. And again, I'm so happy to be here, and I'm so happy to see all of you beautiful people sitting with me and enlivening this old ritual. It's really old. We don't do that many things that are this old. At least we know it comes from Dogen's time, which is 13th century, but it's probably earlier than that in some form or another. So it's quite odd, really, what we're doing. But at least we know it has a very deep root. So for the past several years, the June Sesshin has been on Joshu. And this year, I really wanted to talk about the five rings. I think I put Dokai in a bit of a position because I don't think that's one of your topics necessarily. So we'll see how we creatively move together. But the general topic will be Dungshan. And maybe we'll keep doing Dungshan for a while. I feel like that's a really interesting way of studying someone over a long period of time. You kind of, if you've been here, you get a hit of what that person felt like. Dungshan sometimes depends on where you're reading. He can also be called Tozan. His teacher was Yunyang. So he was an 11th generation teacher and in the same generation as Rinzai. So Rinzai and Dungshan were the two leading people in that generation, and they had very different styles. And Soto Zen comes from Dungshan's style. And this happened in the 9th century, what we're studying. He has beautiful koans, which maybe sometime we'll get into. Maybe Dokai might get into them, or sometime we will. He was the beginning of the silent illumination Zen. That phrasing came from Dungshan. And he wrote the Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, which is the one we chant often. And I didn't know this before, but it was a commentary on the Sandokai by Dungshan. And the other thing about those two, just passing on information, is they were the two poems that were given to you when you were transmitted up until a certain time. And then now we don't get the poems, although they're in our Soto. You know, we chant them, but now we get different things. And I think Dogen changed quite a bit of what it was, but also maybe before that. But we don't get those two poems now. They're these long diagrams, actually, kind of is what you get when you get transmitted now. So I think I got involved in the five ranks. I've known about them for decades, but I've always been afraid of them. And I've always read the poems and thought, I'll forget this, you know, I don't know what they're talking about. So I think I got interested because I've been studying Tibetan Mahamudra, and some of it I'm going to share with you today. They have a lot of systemized way of studying, which Soto Zen doesn't have so much. But we do have a few systems. And I was very curious, does the system I'm learning in Mahamudra have anything to do, could I find it in Zen? And the two systems that I found that we do use are the ox herding pictures. A little bit of a a little bit of an expression of the path and the ranks. Now, I think the translation of a rank is not such a good translation because all of a sudden we're really doing step ladders then, you know, and you want to be in the fifth rank. And you don't want to be, you don't even know, you don't even understand the ranks, and you don't want to be in the first one, you know. And that's not the way they are at all. It's not a ranking. And I think from Dungshan, and I can see it when we read the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, it's a lot about how does duality, which is what our ordinary thinking always picks up. I mean, that's how our brain, our discursive brain works. We divide everything, night and day, man and woman, birth and death. It's always dual. And in Buddhism, we're trying to find some kind of unity, some kind of oneness. But between two-ness and oneness, there's many, many problems. Because even saying two-ness and oneness, I have two-ness. So the five ranks are a lot about how do you bring two-ness and oneness into a real unity or real integrity or a real oneness that doesn't obliterate anything. So I think numerologically, there's often been when you're dealing with two, well, then they do three, you know, the three is really big. We have a lot of threes, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, Sila, Samadhi, and Prajna, God the Father, the Holy Ghost, and...
Dharmakaya.
So there's a lot of threes trying to help us understand two-ness and oneness, right? But the next numerological thing is fiveness. And he talks about it in the Jewel Mirror Samadhi. He said the hexagram has the five flavored herb, the five vajra. So the five positions, let us call them the five positions because the ranks just get me right into hierarchy and I'm not that interested in hierarchy. So the five positions are about how do we very, very subtly be a unified person and not dividing the world into two. So that's what at least I'm going to talk about this time. What I did to prepare was I listened to Dido Laurie's tapes. He's one of the few people that I found that actually really works with the ranks. And though I'm not that calm or I don't have a natural affinity with Dido Laurie, but I listened to the tapes anyway because I really wanted to learn about the ranks and see if they had anything to do with what I've been studying. And I believe they do. So that's the excitement for me, is to see if I can tell you what I'm learning. But seeing it's the first day of Sishin, and we're just trying to gather our minds, I thought I would talk about the zero rank. And Dido Laurie talks about the zero rank. This is how we prepare ourselves to be able to see the first rank. And the first rank is having an insight into emptiness or into vastness or into silence. So it's very hard to get to a place where you have an insight into shunyata. It's a big deal, really, you know. So how do we get there? And Dido Laurie really talked a lot about questions, seeking, arising the Bodhi mind. But I wanted to talk a lot today and what I'd like to talk about is how do we concentrate, learn how to concentrate so that our minds are at a place where we can receive emptiness. And that takes quite a bit of doing. And it's not just linear. I just want to keep saying this is not a linear thing. Because when I look at this chart, oh, it makes me cry. I see 40 years of sitting in my life to go from here to go up here. When I look at this chart, I see a 7-day session, how we concentrate and where we go in a session. When I look at the ranks or the positions, I see the totality of a practice. So there's many, many layers to these paths, and they're not linear. Maybe you can find your practice generally, like, oh, I'm over here generally when I'm sitting these days. But maybe you say, oh, I'm over here, but I'm up here too. You know, so not to get too step laddery. So one of the risks I'm taking is to talk about development in a Katagiri Roshi temple, because he wasn't really into teaching development. He was a very non-technical teacher. And some people also say that Dogen didn't teach developmentally, but I really say that's not totally true, because that's the two-ness. That's how we as human beings develop into spiritually mature people. It doesn't happen at a snap of a finger, as many of us in this room can testify, because we've been sitting for long decades, you know. It doesn't happen at a step of... There is a development, and yet every moment is oneness. Every moment is it. So this is very subtle, and I think that's what the ranks are about, is understanding that there's development and there's immediacy, both. And they work together completely. I mean, the fifth rank is they're completely, totally unified. And there's, you don't have to kill anything. So, there's three things we know about our human minds, and you might already know it by only four, how many sittings? By seven sittings, you already know that our minds are distractible. Right? We know that pretty good. We're distracted by thoughts, emotions, and sensory stimuli. And even if I'm not thinking, the birds can distract me, or other things. We have a discontinuous mind. We're not continuously present. That we know from our sitting, we watch it. And we have a reactive mind, which is if we don't like something, if we have aversion, we push it away. And if we like something, we grab onto it and want to keep it. So how do we open this type of a mind so that we can find an unconditional mind or touch into that which is unconditioned? So we practice, and usually we practice for many years. And a lot of what I'm thinking about, again, was this thing in the Fukan Zazengi. What is a non-thinking mind? What's the sentence? How do you think of not thinking? Non-thinking. So that's a really hard sentence to understand. And I have found that this elephant path has kind of clarified things for me about how do we get to a mind that is open and not distracted by thoughts, not clinging, very open, vast, infinite mind. And when I say mind, you could also say body, but it's really beyond the body. It's like DNA mind or vast mind. It's not confined by time and space. So I want to just say this. Dan Brown, who I've been studying with, he's a scientist, he's a doctor, so he has a lot of scientific stuff. Anyway, I thought this was very interesting about the mind, that the thoughts, our discursive thinking, are the slowest conceptualizing thing. They conceptualize a thought at 500 to 2,000 milliseconds. It takes for a thought to conceive something. The next level is what he calls directed attention, which is not, you're not thinking, but you've placed your mind on something. Kind of mindfulness, but directed attention, like direct your attention to your breath. That kind of directed attention works at 200 milliseconds. So it's quite a bit faster. Attention is quicker than thinking. That's very interesting. He makes a discrimination between awareness or attention and the thinking mind. And he says, you cannot touch the big mind with the thinking mind. It's not fast enough. And maybe you can 200 milliseconds with the directed attention, if just attention, not thinking. But awareness, the not even directed, just aware, is the quickest attention. It's less than 7 milliseconds. So thoughts can really be too slow to see reality. So you aren't going to find it through your thinking. This leads us to non-thinking. The non-thinking is this awareness. It's a full open mind, but the mind is not asleep and it's not distracted. But it's not even directed. It's just that mind can see reality. So how do we get there? It's a kind of a slow game, right? Because our discursive thinking is so habituated and so strong. He had an image that I'll just say because I thought it was interesting. And he's quite a sportsman, so he had a name of a baseball player. And I'm not a sportsman, so I didn't write the name down. So for you who are, you probably would know this guy. So anyway, he was a famous hitter, and he practiced with tennis balls at 150 miles an hour, which is, it's impossible to hit. It kind of reminded me of Star Wars when he was learning the thing with that little, if he thought about it, he couldn't get it. But he was trying to use awareness to hit the robot ball. So this guy practiced with 150 miles per hour tennis ball, which he never could hit, but he practiced with it really, really fast. And then he would switch to a regular baseball at 95 miles per hour, and he could hit every single one because he had trained in a different way. So that's a little bit, I think, what we're trying to do, is to train our minds in a different way, a more total way, to see what's happening in the moment. So this elephant path tanka started from the 9 stages of the mind staying, which is attributed to a sangha in 506 AD. So this is very, very old, from a sangha. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm just going to go through it the way I see it now, which is, again, I've only been working with this for 3 months or so. So perhaps, you know, I don't know everything about it. And then I have a handout. I have handouts because I thought you might want to, on your break or something, think about it a little bit. So, okay. So here's the monk starting out, the very beginning. He has two things. Does he have two things in his hand? Yes. He has the rope of mindfulness, and he has a staff, and they call that the prod of wisdom. And there is a blue, an entirely blue elephant, and then there's a monkey. So in the beginning, the monkey is leading. Right? Our monkey mind is totally in control. And the elephant is following the monkey, and the person is quite far behind with his two tools. And then you'll see these fire. There's fire here, here, and here, and here. Is that the last fire? So there's fire on the path. So there's another wonderful image that they gave about fire at this retreat I went to. It's like a rocket ship. When a rocket ship takes off, to get through our Earth's atmosphere, it needs a lot of power. It has boosters. Then goes up, right? I don't know too much about it, but I don't know. And I don't know how many boosters it has. But there has to be a great deal of effort to get out of the stratosphere, is that, or the gravity. And they're saying that you need a lot of intensity to concentrate your mind in the beginning, like a rocket ship trying to get through gravity. But once a rocket ship is through gravity, out of the atmosphere, you better not use that much effort, right? What would happen? You would be like millions of miles away, because there's nothing pushing against you. It's completely open. So when you know that you're through the gravity, you have to completely change your technique. And if the rocket ship wants to go into the space station, I've been told, they do tiny infinitesimal beep, just the slightest little movement to hook up to where they want to go. Because there's nothing pushing against them, so they don't need any effort. Just a little poop, poop. So that's the way it is with Zazen. In the beginning, if you don't have enough effort, you can't concentrate your mind. It just is so strong. So that's one of the reasons Zen has this form, because to even do the form, you have to have a lot of effort, and you sit when you're hurting, and you. So built into our form is fire builder, right? But if you don't do some boosters, you're not going to get a concentrated mind. And he calls this intensifying. You have to intensify your sitting to get out of the gravity or the karma of discursive thought, which is so intense. So he starts to intensify. Still, he's behind, way behind these two over here, but the fire is happening. Here's another fire. And intensifying in this is like if you say, I'm following my breath as your concentration point. Well, inhale and exhale might not be enough. to intensify, you go into more detail. You make your mind more curious. So that's another word you can use. If you don't want to use intensify, you can use the word curious. Like, what is my breath actually doing it? Can I feel it in the, this is going into a 7-point breath. Do I feel it in the beginning? Do I feel it as I inhale? Do I feel it at the end of the inhale? Do I feel the beginning of the exhale? What happens during the exhale? Do I feel the end of the exhale and what happens in the in-between? So you see how that intensifies just instead of... You're really curious. Or with sound, if you're... We're not all doing the same practice, and we don't have to. I mean, sometime we might do this and everyone's working with the breath, but no matter what you're working with, even if you're working with loving kindness, you can intensify how you're doing your loving kindness, or you can intensify or be more curious or get your mind to stay more to sound. What's the beginning of the sound? What's the duration of the sound? What's the end of the sound? And so what you're doing is, by your curiosity, you're concentrating the mind. The mind doesn't have a chance to wander off as much if you are intensifying. So we're up about here now. The first change has happened on the after the second turn. The practitioner, the rope of mindfulness is around the elephant's head. But the monkey is starting to change colors. The monkey here is all brown with a beige head. Here he's brown on the bottom and one arm is beige in the head. Here he's a little bit more beige. The elephant is white and he turned around to look at the practitioner. So he's a little bit more tamed. And do you guys, many of you know the ox herding pictures. This is very similar. The ox herding pictures is... searching for the bull, which I think is very not even on here, discovering the footprints, seeing the bull, and catching the bull. So this is catching the elephant. And there's still fire. You still have to be intensifying at this point. You can't let down. And then here, it's still again, now it's the head and the two legs are white. It's still, the guy is still behind and the monkey's ahead. But as it turns this corner, more intensifying, more curiosity, more trying to keep with your object, all of a sudden, on this layer, the practitioner is in the lead. Yay. The rope of mindfulness is still around the neck, and now he's using his staff. Looks like almost like an axe here of wisdom to tame. Now the elephant is half white. So a lot has happened here. You're really kind of staying with your object more. It's a little bit more relaxed. But there's a rabbit sitting on top of the elephant. And that means, you know, rabbits are, ooh, cool, you know, so soft and a little pet. Well, do you know in your zazen when it's not too hard, you're kind of half concentrated, things are nice, fuzzy, maybe you can sit through 3 sittings and you're just listening to the birds. It's very comfortable and fuzzy. This means you have a rabbit on your back. And the answer to the rabbit is, this is where Kyosaku actually, wake up! Right now! Shake that off! Don't be in a trance! Come back! Right? So, Now, many people, and me too, we can sit like this for years, not knowing exactly what we're doing. Just, it's, oh, I can do that. I can do sit-in now. It doesn't hurt too much. I can just sit here and have a rabbit and be very, very comfortable. It's very sweet, the birds. I love nature. Hokyoji is great for nature. But you're not going to enliven this big mind by that state. It's too dull, too dull. It's a trance, kind of you're in a trance. And for me, sometimes my breath is almost orgasmic, I could say, you know, like. Which I like, you know. Who doesn't like that? But it's not clear. It won't get you to the present moment. It won't get you to the type of awareness that we would like to have. So you wake up, you shake off that rabbit. And there's a little bit of fire to have to shake it off. Now you see the elephant's more than white, and there's blue. The monkey's holding on by the tail, and the guy's leading. Here, the monkey is behind. The elephant is all white, and I don't think it has either the rope or the prod. So this last bit, where are we now? We're turning the last corner. We're going into past gravity. We're now in the stratosphere. No, the space, I guess. We're now in no gravity. And we have to be much, much more subtle. And no effort. If you do too much effort, the I comes up really big. Right? I need to try harder. But at this stage, no I, no nothing. You just, you're easing off. Now, this instruction was wonderful for me. They said, if you're 80 to 100% concentrated, so that means two-thirds of the time, you're able to stay with your point of concentration, whatever that is, your breath or sound or loving kindness or shikantaza. I mean, I think in the very beginning it's too hard to do shikantaza because you haven't built up any awareness. But as you go up, you can use the present moment or whatever is arising. But still, if you're off in the dream, you're not doing shikantaza. I think that's a misunderstanding, that shikantaza is just you sit down and whatever happens is fine. I don't think that's clear enough to be called true shikantaza. Your mind has to be open and clear, and then what is happening is what you're experiencing, not just a kind of dullness on the cushion. So, you have reached the space. 80% is good enough. I like that. You know, a little leeway there, you know, for our distractibility. So when you reach 80%, then you start what they call easing up. Easing and waiting. So what this means is, okay, I've really tried hard in the beginning. I'm really coming back to my concentrate point, letting go of my thoughts. I'm very concentrated. I'm really trying hard to do this. Then it starts to get easier. It's not as hard. In this section, they call it patchy or a divided mind. This is very interesting. This is probably through here. Still, you have a little fire. Do you recognize this state? I'm concentrated enough that I can stay with my breath. So I'm pretty concentrated. But actually, between the inhale and the exhale, in the duration, my mind goes someplace. Like, oh, the bird. Or, oh, my son. So you're half concentrated, But still, other things are coming in the cracks. They sometimes call another image for that is it's ice on the top, but you can still hear the water flowing underneath. A divided mind. So with a divided mind, you have to be a little bit more fire to get it so that you're not thinking about something else. That's called patchy attention. So with this easing off, so if I'm now, I'm through the patchy part. Now I find in Sishin that the first couple of days, I'm pretty patchy. If I'm it's hard to get concentrated, and then when I am concentrated, my mind is still very, goes off very easily to what I have to do or the lecture I'm going to give or, you know. But as the days go on, the mind can stop, can really settle down, which is why a longer sesshin is very, very nice. Because after 3 days, you have a possibility of being easily concentrated without patchy, divided mind. And if you get to this place, sometimes I do the fourth or the fifth or the sixth day, where I'm pretty concentrated. So again, it's not linear. I'm saying that in terms of using this as the week sesshin, but even when I'm sitting today in the first day, I notice where I can ease up because I'm at that place in my sitting. So it really depends on your own concentration and how much work you've done to build up to sesshin. So at this place, when you're easing off, you're losing a sense of I. I am not sitting anymore. You're letting go of that feeling that I'm sitting. You're also losing effort. You're not trying anymore. And at that point, they say, you ease up a little bit on your effort and you wait. And if you're still not thinking too much, you can ease off a little more. But what happens is, and this is the subtle, you're in the landing dock, beep, 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 really, really subtle. If you ease off too much, if you go loose, a flood of thoughts come back. And it's like a flood because they've been kind of at bay. Then when they see, oh, you know, so I could be really, really quiet and I get too loose and all of a sudden I'm planning my entire lecture. And then I say, this is the prod. Another word they used for the prod of a wisdom is metacognitive awareness. He's a scientist. Meta, though, big, big, super big awareness or metacognitive. So at that point, I'm saying to myself, oh, I'm flooded with thought. This is metacognitive. I need to tighten up a little bit. So I go back to a little bit of effort, but because I'm in that stage, a little bit of effort. And I can get back to quiet. Then I go again. Ease off, just a little tiny bit. Ease, ease, ease. If the thoughts come back, I know I have to tighten up. If they don't, I can start to sit in what they call, okay, so we're going up here. The elephant is completely white. The guy doesn't have any tools now, no tools. And right up here, he's sitting in zazen, and the elephant is like a dog, like a little pet, sitting right by him. This is what they call, in Tibetan, automatic samadhi. Isn't that beautiful? It's self-receiving samadhi in Dogen's language, where you're completely sitting. Just sitting. There's no effort. Your mind is not distracted. You're completely in this awareness, the highest level of awareness, and you're even the sense of I'm doing this is relaxed out of you. And the samadhi, the concentration, is automatic. Now, I know that a few of you have experienced this at different levels, you know, on other sessions at certain days. Usually it's more near the end. But it's a very interesting place. And this is where the first rank can start, where you're mind is open, your sense of self is greatly reduced, and you're not trying very hard. It's just there for you. And then, and now this is really interesting, the very top part. This elephant, this is, it's not so good on this particular diagram, but this elephant went off and then is coming back. And I was told in the teaching that was given to me is that that elephant went into the jhanas and went into magical realms. And, you know, there's lots of, boy, you can get stuck in that world forever. But it doesn't have any practical use in terms of enlightenment as a human being. It's just woo-woo. And it's very easy to go into the jhanas and think you're really the bee's knees. You know, you really have got it. Which is the shadow of the first rank is cockiness or arrogance or I know something that the rest of the world doesn't know, which is not enlightenment. Yeah, right? We all know that. Yes, I'm looking around. You know that arrogance is not enlightenment. Okay, just so that's clear. So anyway, this person said, oh yeah, I got to come back. And I think that the five ranks are what leads you up into Buddhahood, which is, now you have a clear mind. You're able to stay in the present moment for the most part, you know, 80%, no perfection. You're concentrated, you're clear, you're present. And then you can start dealing with oneness, two-ness, and integration, and how do you become a person. So here in the ox herding pictures with, I'm imagining most of you are familiar with, riding, so taming the bull is down here. Riding the bull home, I think, might be up here. The bull transcended might be here or somewhere in here. Both bull and self transcended. That's starting to be automatic samadhi, and that's going into shunyata or emptiness. Then that is where the first rank starts. The second rank is reaching the source. So in the ox herding pictures, you have a blank, nothing, a zero. And then the next picture is sometimes of a waterfall and trees and leaves. And this is the second rank where you come out of, where your consciousness starts to come back. Discriminated thinking comes back. And you see the world through the eyes of the Absolute. You've experienced emptiness. Then as you come back into the world, because that happens, right? Even during Sishin, even if you have a taste of profound silence or one of the other exotic things, it goes away, you know? And then you're back in the world. You see the world differently, but those are the two, the absolute and the relative. The first rank is the absolute. The second rain is coming into the relative, but having seen the absolute. So the relative is changed, but it's still the relative. Those are the first and the second ranks. And maybe just as a preview, when do I have to be? Who's the? I think I have another 15 minutes, yeah.
9:45.
Okay. So I'm just going to really briefly go through the five ranks so you just get an overall sense, because we've really worked hard to try and get self-receiving samadhi, automatic presence without a sense of self and without too much effort. You're just really in the present moment. Then you might have an insight at that time into what the world is really like, or you might see emptiness or silence. There's illumination. There's a lot of things. Then, and in that, that is really the state of no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no consciousness. So you're not perceiving it, right? You're not perceiving it. That's what it means. So a lot of times I think I've just passed over it. I've been in those states, but it didn't register, so I didn't even know what was going on, really. So in that sense, I think these schemas are kind of good, because they're the finger pointing at the moon, and then you can get a little heads up on what might be happening. So there's no thinking, there's no perception, nothing. Then you return back, your consciousness starts to come back. And they often say at the bridge, at the junction, well, I don't know, I forget the word exact, the threshold of coming back from no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, all of a sudden your mind is starting to work again. You're starting to see objects in the world, duality, people, you're in the zendo. At that threshold, you often have an insight about what it, you know, your mind just does its thing. And it says, that was me. You know, all of a sudden, you have an idea or a concept. Now, the concept isn't the thing, but it still is an insight that can lead you to a whole new life or a whole different way of looking at things. And you can't measure insights. You all who've been sitting a long time know that you've had insights, smaller, larger, little bitty ones. They're all important. They change how you lead your life after them. You don't get rid of them. That's what I've noticed. That when I have an insight, it really stays with me. I experienced it. So it stays with me and it changes the way I try to live my life. Now the third, this is very, I love this. I just thought this information was so great. And maybe you'll agree with me, and maybe you won't, but that's the problem of being a teacher. But the third rank is going back and forth between the first and the second rank repeatedly. Back and forth. So that's why the first and the second rank are still called immature, because they're divided. They're duality. Absolute and relative. But the more you go back and forth and back and forth, you know this? Like when I first did Sesshins, the first 10 years of doing Sesshin, Sesshin was totally different than my regular life. Totally different. But after 2 decades, I've been doing this back and forth and back and forth, Sushin and regular, Sushin and regular. And I've been changing my regular life back and forth, back and forth. Now I don't really feel that Sushin and my regular life are that different. They've kind of synthesized. So that's the third rank, is called synthesis or integration, where because you've gone back and forth so much, you start to see them as one. You start to integrate that they're not so different. And that can happen during Sushin. You can be going back and forth during Sushin, in your life between Sushin and your regular life, even in your daily life between what you're doing in Zazen, the morning Zazen, and your regular life. And then maybe you do afternoon Zazen and you're still going back and forth and back and forth. And the more you do that back and forth and back and forth, they start to integrate. They're not so different. You start to see the absolute in the relative and the relative in the absolute. And this is where compassion is born, in the third rank. You begin to see everyone as you. You begin to see everyone makes mistakes. You begin to love even your enemies. Things really start to change when you begin to see that they are not separate. They're co-arise in Zen, we call it. But in the beginning, you don't see them co-arising. In the beginning, you keep them compartmentalized. Then you have the third rank, which is synthesis, integration, and compassion. And I think the third, fourth, and fifth rank are all Oxfording pictures like 9 and 10. The fourth and fifth rank are two levels of returning to the world, or going back into the marketplace. You know that picture? This happy practitioner, maybe with a big stomach, goes into the marketplace and with gift-bestowing hands, and is completely ordinary, no magic woo-woo about them. You don't see that they know about shunyata or anything like that. You know, they're not a loom, they don't have a halo, nothing. They're just ordinary people who have integrated the compassion and now are just helping people. But in the five ranks, there are two stages of that. Isn't that cool? Not just one. The second stage, the fifth rank, they say you're old and mellow. Really mellow. And people don't get it at all that you're enlightened, that you're really present. It's really no ego. The relative has become absolutely it. You're back. Do you get what I mean? You're back. And I was taken when you talked about Iku Narazaki. What's his first name? Iku? No. Iko. Well, Narazaki Roshi. You said they only taught, how do you hold the toothbrush and how do you fold? Do you see how that is a little bit like this? They're not talking about anything but how you live your life. Totally, you're unified. You have an undivided mind and you're unified in life. You don't have to show off at all. You don't have to have people see your accomplishment at all. You're just not even interested in that. And you live your life in the end. So we did this whole thing. Not only this, but then we had to do more just to come back to living our life exactly the way it is. It's a joke. in a lot of ways. It's the same joke as living and dying. Like, oh, you mean I have to die now? I didn't quite get everything accomplished. Or the joke of having children. I'm in that right now because I'm having to let go of my children. That's a big joke. In the beginning, you're in the beginning, it's totally about not letting them go. Totally about attachment. They'll do anything you want. It's just about giving these beautiful, I mean, they're your heart in the beginning. Then middle school hits. Oh, you're not me exactly, and I don't like everything you're doing. And then high school, it gets even worse. And then you have to let them go. You have to let them go, even though they come and stay in the basement.
You let them go and they come back on their
own. Yeah, so maybe it's that going back and forth thing. Going back and forth, going back and forth, until it's integrated. And then they take care of you, right? And hopefully, in my generation, not everybody took care of their parents, but we'll see what the next generation does. So, I didn't think I was going to go that far today, but I got on a roll. That's all. Really, maybe I don't have to give any more lectures because that's what I wanted to say. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So here is this sheet. It's a little bit of the summary of how you concentrate, going from, I didn't use all of the metaphors, but you'll read the metaphors, like driving the car is one metaphor. But intensifying, patchy or divided concentration, and you still have to intensify. When the rabbit's on your back, you have to wake up. And then when you're 80 to 100% concentrated, you can begin to ease off, wait, ease off, see. Don't get too loose, or once you get this instruction, you see it totally. That when you're too loose, your story just whams you in the face. It comes right back with a lot of, you know, a lot of agitation. So, and then the last one is automatic samadhi, where you're sitting in no effort. There's no I doing the zazen. You're just sitting in ease. Self-receiving samadhi. Maybe one day if we got the books, we'll chant the self-receiving samadhi. But let's do that later, maybe the fourth day or something. So, you can take these. I don't remember. Well, let's see. That might be enough. So I think for the next, usually the first 2 days or 3 days of a session are really settling, finding your seat, remembering how to negotiate session, and then just being exactly where you are. So maybe I should, just before I stop, have a little talk about the antidote. I just gave you a real developmental schemata, didn't I? So that's just pointing at the moon, right? It's just a scheme. I have found it helpful. It's clarified, actually, it's really clarified me to have heard the elders, the ancestors, give me a scheme. On the other hand, the end is the beginning. Every moment, we have to receive the moment exactly as it is. That's the primary instruction. That's a concentration in and of itself. Just to receive the moment as it is. And we're not going anywhere. That's the other one. Maybe that's something to talk about later. Even though we think we're going up here is now. Up here is everywhere. So just each moment is it. It contains all of this in each moment. Okay. The Tenzo is leaving. And what are you doing? Asking a question? Oh. Okay. Well, I guess people are telling me to stop.
No, I'm done.